Between juggling client meetings, managing your website, and keeping up with everyday tasks, who has time to stress about website security? With Kinsta, they take care of the technical stuff so you can focus on what you do best. Kinsta provides managed hosting for WordPress, offering lightning-fast load times, top-tier security, and unmatched human-only customer support. Whether you're a business owner, web developer, running a digital agency, Kinsta gives you complete peace of mind by keeping your site online secure and performing at its best. They even have a user-friendly dashboard called My Kinsta that simplifies the site management with tools for cache control, debugging, redirects, and CDN setup. And thanks to their unlimited free expert-led migrations, you won't experience any downtime when switching to Kinsta. Plus, their 24/7, 365 human-only support is available in multiple languages to help with any inquiries, no matter how complex. Ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get your first month free when you sign up at kinsta.com today. It's the perfect opportunity to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses worldwide to power their website. Visit kinsta.com to get this limited time offer for new customers on select plans. Don't miss out. Get started for free today.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome to Inspired by Her, the podcast that will give you the inspiration, motivation, and tips for success from some of the top executives, CEOs, and influencers from around the globe. With your host, serial entrepreneur, and named one of the most influential Filipina in the world, Kate Hancock.
And we are live. Hi, everyone. This is Kate Hancock. And I have here my very special guest, Christina Gerasi. Hi, Christina.
Hello. Hi. How are you?
I'm very well. Christina is a lawyer. She's a founding shareholder at Gerasi Law Firm. Christina, for anyone who didn't know you, can you please introduce yourself?
So I'm Christina Gerasi. I co-founded Gerasi Law Firm in 2007, and we started out as a law firm, and we have since, we've now become a multifaceted firm. We have a media division that hosts, trade shows, conferences. We have an in-house publication and magazine, and we have a consulting division. We actually designed a platform for our clients, which are private money lenders and non-traditional, non-conventional lenders, to it's really a deal-making site. So that's kind of in a nutshell. But I also have a property development company, and I have a portfolio of properties. I previously owned a lash studio that was in epic fail, but
we can talk more about that. Well, Christina, everyone, I met her in Greece through the Women of EO. That was what, 4 years ago?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we went to Napa together. You're kind enough to get me a seat of the what is that company?
It's JetSuite.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah, and it's fun. Isn't it fun?
That was a lot of fun. And then we went to the Philippines together. She was at my wedding and shared.
I felt very honored to be in your beautiful wedding.
We shared a room. We still laugh about it, right?
Yes, your wedding night, because Kate had brought, brought her village with her from the United States. And so we show up in the Philippines, and there you expected, because you have two hotels, one with 4 rooms and then one with 10 rooms. And you had expected that you were still building the 10 room hotel.
It was,
we showed up and there was no windows. There was 2 of the 10 semi-completed. Oh, it was so funny. So we had to get extra hotel rooms on the island, and some of us ended up sharing a room. I think on your wedding night, I refused to sleep in your room. And I shared a room with another girlfriend of ours and her brother. And I think the room was probably about 100 square feet.
Yes. Yeah. So, hey, we made it work. But at the same time, we had so much fun. But I still remember my face of like how shocked I am when the rooms are not done and we're like, oh my God, where I'm going to put everyone.
Did you ever see that movie? It was, it's not coming to mind, but it was that actor that played in Beetlejuice, and he was running a car factory and they had a certain quota to match the Japanese car company that was acquiring them. And so they're walking the lot and they're pretending to clean a window that doesn't exist. It's like, that's what I felt like I was in that movie with you. You were going to inspect the property. And they were like, all your workers were like, oh no.
I know. I think the crazy thing, the guy that I was working with, he really promised that everything will be done in 30 days. I said, okay, are you sure it's going to be done? Up to this day, he said it's going to be done. But you know what? That's part of a great story. We had a blast. And it's definitely something that I learned so much from that experience.
Well, it was so neat to land like on your island. Because remember, we spent a few days in Manila. And your connections had gotten us into the Mungbae Palace. And it was a phenomenal experience. And then we go to your, leaving, Manila, which is a big city. It's like similar. It's crazy like LA, to go to this beautiful tropical island. And when we landed, they had a parade for you.
No, for all of you.
Said, welcome Kate and Dan and guests. And it was just so special. They had like a little marching band. I'm like, wow, I knew you were a big deal. I didn't know you were this big. It's so loving there. People were just so kind.
Yeah, we had
very kind.
That was an amazing experience. And I can't wait for us to do it again very soon.
Yeah, when this quarantine is lifted.
All right, Christina, I have to ask you, where did you grow up? Did you grow up in LA? Tell me.
So I was born in Whittier and predominantly born and raised in Whittier and Pico Rivera. My parents briefly bought a house when they were married. They bought a house in San Gabriel, and then they bought a house. They had a house built out in Ontario when there was really nothing there. And I only think we lived there a couple of years before they got divorced. When they got divorced, me and my mom moved back to Pico Rivera, and we lived in, my grandmother had 4 little houses, and we lived in one of those houses. There were 3 one bedrooms and 1 two bedroom. And we started out in the 2 bedroom, and then there would sometimes be a confrontation between my mom and my grandma. We'd move out and then we'd move back in. And so it was always in that area.
Yeah. Okay. What is the best memories of your childhood and the worst?
That's a loaded question. So my childhood, the best memories I could say was I always felt loved. I never felt unloved. My mother did a really good job of making sure that that I knew that she loved me. My childhood, on a whole was a pretty violent. It was a pretty, it was a pretty tumultuous childhood. I would never say there was really any stability. My parents got divorced, as I said earlier, when I was 6. There was a lot of domestic abuse, and I remember seeing that. And my parents split up. My mom moved me and my sister, my younger sister Olivia, to Pico Rivera. And I would, it was a rough town. It was a rough city. People, they minded their own business, and you just, that was just what I knew, you know. It was a,
yeah. Okay. So do you always wanted to be a lawyer growing up? Is that something that you really,
you want? Well, my mother always wanted to be a lawyer, and her uncle was an attorney, and her cousin was an attorney, and she actually was a paralegal, and she always, you know, would pound into my head that an education is something that nobody could ever take away from you. And what I love to do, I love to sing. In fact, I sang at your wedding.
Yeah. You have a wonderful
and,
voice.
But I knew that I didn't want to live the way that I grew up. I didn't want to be stuck, you know, wondering, you know, when the electrical is going to be shut off. Or, I mean, I grew up most, you know, there were times where we had no hot water and we would steal electricity from the neighbors, or, you know, many times we didn't even have food. And so it was something that I knew I didn't want, you know, once I grew up, I knew that wasn't the life that I wanted to lead. And my mother always told me an education was the way out. And I knew that was my ticket out. So I always went to school. I always had a profound love for reading. Unfortunately, I got really sick when I was a child. And I was in and out of the hospital months at a time. They had removed my mastoid and a bunch of inner ear bones. And when I came home and I was recovering, I think I was around 8 years old, 8 or 9 years old, my mom threw this big thick book at me. It was like 1,000 pages long. And she said, "You're not going to sit in front of the TV and recover. You're going to do something. You're going to read." And so I remember she gave me this book from the supermarket she had picked up. And that was when my love for reading really began. And I read everything. I still really, really enjoy like fiction. Mm-hmm. Ken Follett's one of my favorite writers. And it kind of transported me to another world that I can completely invent inside my head, because my reality was pretty dismal, you know, being sick and not being in the most stable environment.
Yeah. So bring me, I think you share that you're, what school, university of which one did you want to?
So I ended up, believe it or not, I ended up dropping out of high school and going to junior college and getting my AA degree. And then I transferred to Cal Poly Pomona. Mm-hmm. And really, once I transferred to Cal Poly is when things really started shooting up. You know, I got my degree in political science. I was a double major. It was music and political science. And I came to the point where I had to choose one or the other, because I couldn't afford to stay in school and, you know, pursue a double major if it wasn't going to, in my mind, it wasn't going to provide any real results. And so I knew I wanted to go to law school. And I ended up applying and getting a scholarship to Chapman Law School, which is why I ended up going there.
Wow. I know you're a trial lawyer. Can you tell me your very first case? I know you're feisty. I've seen your work. And tell me about the first case that you remember, or the very first
one. Oh, my first trial? Oh, amazing. It was the Carol Wallace versus it was a Carol Wallace case, and essentially a broker had swindled title from an elderly woman and tried to foreclose and kick her out and stealing at that time. This is 2009. And it was a jury trial. It went 3 weeks. It was very exciting. I had a five month old child. So it was over in Santa Ana at the Santa Ana courthouse. Judge Wilkinson was my judge. Very, very good, stern judge. And I was always very I was very assertive, very mouthy. And I just remember I would, objection, Your Honor. And he'd be like, calm down, calm down. And I was like, well, I would go to the bathroom during our recesses and pump because I had a 4-month-old. I was still breastfeeding. And so I think with those hormones, and then I'm just naturally somewhat very, outgoing. It was definitely a roller coaster. It was a lot of fun. My closing argument ended up being an hour long, and they deliberated. We came in and we won, and I was just ecstatic. And they did a write up about it in the Daily Journal, and verdict search. So that was my first trial. That was a pretty big deal in my field to be recognized, for winning a trial. And then it happened to have been my first. And that was my first.
Wow. You're in the trial and you're pumping because you're breastfeeding. That's just a superwoman right there. And plus you won.
I never thought of it that way. It just never crossed my mind not to do it. People always ask me, "Wow, you had it so rough as a child." And once my cousin Carl Coles was like, "You really made. I'm so proud of you. You did so much for yourself, and you never let anything stand in your way." And my thought was, there was never any idea in my head I shouldn't be that way.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, what is the motivation behind that?
I knew you were going to ask that question. And I would say, because I'm very into, I know you're very into, find your why, recognizing and defining your why. It's the concept that starts from that Simon Sinek wrote that book, Start With Why, and it's great. And we see it in a lot of our tools that we use, you and I, as personal development. And they say to clearly define, what your contribution is to the world, why you do what you do. And I would say there were different phases throughout my life. I in the beginning, I knew that I could always see 10 steps ahead of everything. I just always had this vision of how things could easily work out. And so around me, I would see people continually doing things that hurt themselves. And, friends that my mother had, I would just see them in these really bad relationships with men, repeating the cycle. We had a neighbor, and this girl was 19, and at 19, she had 3 children. And she was married but it was just, she'd never graduated high school. I don't even think she can read or write. And I would just see these people around me growing up just making the same bad decisions. And for me, I could always see, well, if you didn't do this and you did that, then things would work out for you. At a very young age, I just figured things out quickly. And so it was just a no brainer. I'm like, well, I don't want to live like I don't want to live on welfare. I don't want to have to use food stamps. I don't want to worry about, if I'm going to be able to pay my bills. And so I constantly just strived and moved forward, knowing that I could figure it out. And it suited me for a really long time. I had a very, I had a mentality that it was, it was them or it was me, and it certainly wasn't going to be me, and that it suited me for a very, very long time, a very aggressive behavior until it didn't suit me anymore. And I started looking for, eventually I started looking for different ways to be happy. And so I think my why changed from, survival to, flourishing. But education has always been, learning and education has always been kind of what always kind of snapped me out of what I, what was ever holding me back.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
That's amazing. Now, you guys started with two attorneys and scale it. You guys, you're in the pink Inc. 5000 list. And you guys, tell me, what was the secret sauce and what was your role?
Oh my God. So we started out, it was just me and my partner, and he had completely had it with his current firm. He was like, I'm quitting and I'm going somewhere else, or I'm starting my own firm. And I had always owned businesses, even when I was in undergrad. My mom was a paralegal. And so there was never any thought in my mind that I didn't want my own business. And I didn't want my own firm. I always wanted my own firm. Even back in undergrad, I would go to local attorneys and I would do bankruptcies and charge them $200, and they would charge their client $1,000. Mm-hmm. And that continued on even into law school. I was always finding kind of like the side hustle. My mom had her own paralegal business, and I would, you know, try and figure out new products or services that she could offer to make more money, to just bring in more revenue, because, you know, we're always hustling to find, you know, to bring in more cash flow, because there was, you know, there just wasn't a lot of it. And I always knew that I wanted my own firm. So when he was completely done with his current firm, he's like, I'm like, well, you know what? You're going to do it. Let's do it now. Because right now we're both bringing in a great income. And I was at a larger firm at the time. I was at a firm that had about 100 lawyers. Mm-hmm. And I was getting real used to the monthly income that firm brought in. And I, you know, that job brought in. And, you know, the perks, you know, every year they'd fly us all out to a certain location and put us up at a hotel for a weekend, and we have this great big party. And I mean, there was, you know, there was definitely really, you know, the lunches and there's a lot of nice benefits to working for a big firm like that. And had, you know, we were over the skyscrapers off of Maine and Irvine. I had this beautiful office with a big building, a big, big window, and a lot of support staff. And you start to get used to this kind of stuff. And when he said I couldn't do this anymore, I want to start my own, you know, we're going to start our own firm. And I go, well, I'm going to get used to the money. So before I do, let's start our own firm. And so he ended up resigning. We got our first office. I still continued to work for a few more months. He got 100, we had 167 square foot office.
Where is that?
It was over off of the Wells Fargo Tower off of Maine and Irvine, tiny little office. And, I remember he brought this litigation case in. I think it was in the work comp court. And, any litigation that came in, I did, because he did security. So he did transactional law. He didn't do litigation. And so whenever we got this little litigation case in, I would go to my office and I would turn off my computer for the firm, lock the door, pray to God that nobody was going to catch me working on my own cases, on my own firm. I was like, oh my God, they catch me, they're going to fire me. And, you know, until we did that. I did that for about 6 months. And then I we had enough clients and I had enough workload to be able to quit and go on full time into the firm. Mm-hmm. So then it was great. We started bringing in more cases, and it was two offices. We had one employee, and I shared an office with her, and my partner shared an office with our server, like literally a server with our files. And it was a server rack that housed our email, our hard drive. It was sitting in an office with him, and I shared an office with her. And I remember staining the desks, you know, because we bought desks secondhand, and I stained them, and just started growing from there. And as momentum picked up, brought in more cases. We brought in an additional employee, and then we brought in a law clerk, and just started gaining momentum. And as the work came in, we started growing. And this was 2007, during the worst recession.
2007. Wow.
we grew out of the worst recession ever. We were hungry. We were driven. We charged a lot less than the big guys. And so people were willing to give us a shot. You know, we worked really hard. We practiced what we coined rent law. I love to say I practiced rent law because I took everything in that would pay the rent. Cases that I would never even look at today.
Wow.
I happily took because they were paying.
Wow. That's amazing. And I was able to visit your office in Irvine. It was beautiful.
Thank you.
Glass door, and it's nicely done. I know you're so good. I remember one lunch, you took me out of lunch, and you've asked me a lot of questions, and a lot of people could learn, especially solo entrepreneurs, right? You're so good at figuring your KPI. How do you scale? I mean, you got it. Like, you play down yourself, but you know so much. So what can you share about what people should know about KPI?
So your KPIs, when I started my law firm, there was this old attorney, and his name was, actually, I just told the story the other day. His name was Moreland Fisher, and he's still around. He's a copyright attorney. And he said, "Christina, I'm going to give you one golden rule. One golden rule. If you listen to me and you do this, you're always going to be successful." And I said, "Okay, Moreland, what is this one golden rule?" He said, "You always spend less than you make." And you'll be fine. Yeah. But in all seriousness, I mean, you have to know what your key product indicators are. You know, for my business, it's time, right? I only have so many attorneys, and they need to be able to bill a certain, they're only able to bill a certain finite amount of time, right? And so my whatever your product is, you need to know what your return on investment is for that. So for me, for lawyers, it's time. We sell time, right? And so we need to know how much time, you know, one attorney, you know, our attorney is able to produce at what product, you know, product quality. And then once it is produced, how much of that will actually be recouped? Because just because an attorney bills 10 hours doesn't mean that I can charge my client 10 hours. And just because I charge my client, say, 5 of the 10, doesn't mean that they're going to pay for 5 of the 10, because maybe they feel that they only really need to pay for 2.5, that the attorney should have been able to do it in less time. Right. So to know your, you know, what the key is, to really drill down on what your product is, what it costs to produce it, and how much you make off of that. And if you have those numbers down, then you know how much you can then use them as projections. I think what you were talking, when we were talking, you were in the spa business.
Yes.
And I endeavored to be in the spa business. I started that lash company. It was a very, you know, painful 3-year process. I loved it, right? But I knew, okay, how much it cost me for lash fill, how much, you know, it was for overhead, how much, you know, I was expected to make off of it, and how many there we had a membership a model. So it was, you know, depending on how many, you know, I knew that I had 226 members. I knew that I would have that monthly income that would, you know, it was a reoccurring income, and then how much on products that we, you know, could, you know, realistically expect to make, which were $3,400 a month. I knew these, and I always knew that there was a deficit. And that's why it was a painful learning process. Mm-hmm. That's why when I talked to you, you were like, "Yeah, I'm doing great." I'm like, "Oh, where do you make your money? Yeah. Is it product? Is it facials? Is it, you know, is it treatments? Is it massage?" And it was a really great conversation with you. By the end of it, you were like, "Oh yeah." Like, well, if that's where you're making your money, then that's where you should focus on.
Yes. Yeah. So can you share to our listener about what your experience as far as, you know, buying a franchise or getting into a franchise?
You don't want to hear that. Don't do it. If you have a vision and you have a concept, you know, here's the thing. I have a friend probably listening, Wesley Kim. He is a great franchisor. I think he's a pharmacist like crazy. I think I call him a drug dealer. He sells legal drugs. But he loves franchise concepts. He loves the business in a box concept. If he can make a great return on investment, I know he really likes like the Pilates concepts. Because then you just pay one employee and you can service 30 women or 30 people at once. And so you're going to have a higher rate of return.
This episode of Inspired by Her is brought to you by Wagner Spray Tech. For a while now, we have been wanting to paint our RV. Luckily, we came across this Wagner paint sprayer called the Flexio 4000. We had a blast painting the outside of the RV because it was 10 times faster than using a brush, which is good, especially in the hot sun. Dan is pretty messy and normally gets paint everywhere. But with the Wagner Flexio 4000, he was able to make it look professionally done since it sprays directly from the can. Also, cleanup was super simple and only took 5 minutes. Visit the link in the show notes today and check it out, the Wagner Spray Tech Flexio 4000.
And you don't have a lot of, you don't have like the office equipment or the continual security equipment or, the insurance that would traditionally go along with a lot of franchises. So he's been really good at honing in on certain concepts. I think he also owns like a creamery. What is it? The cold stone.
The ice cream. Okay.
Yeah. And I think he's pretty against those. But he's really good at that. I am not really great at taking somebody else's concept and implementing it because I'm always looking at ways to make it better or bigger or different or shiny. And I'm just not a really good student. I was a punk rock. I was the lead singer of a punk rock band. I really have kind of an issue with authority. That's why I went to law school. I don't like fitting in a box.
I'm not
a box type of person. And so I would even find myself fighting against a lot of the ideas. And it's not a fit from whom I am.
I can see that.
So
what would you, okay. So, but then there's some other entrepreneur that are super successful.
Right.
With getting other franchise, like we have a lot of friends.
We do.
Yeah. So that's a good learning experience. I learned so much from that experience and I was able to visit your lash studio. It was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yes. So beautiful. Okay. So I
still have the sign and the chandelier in my garage.
I know you're trying to get it.
I think I'm going to hang it in my 9-year-old's room.
Have big lash, yes. And those are expensive. Those are like 15 grand.
No, I don't think we paid that much.
I think I paid mine about that amount.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. I know it's very expensive. Yeah.
They were.
Anyway, so you scale that. I really wanted our listener to really learn from you your secret sauce as far as scaling the business, the law firm from 2 to a multi-million dollar business. Can you tell me what are your secrets?
It's really not a secret. It's really the people. When we first started, we had some really strong growing pains. So we had an influx of work and we had no idea how to grow. And it was really painful because then you're doing crap work and you're working twice as hard, not twice as smart. And you're basically just trying to tread water. But we hired in a guy by the name of Mark Kohler, and he runs Lead with Purpose. And there's very similar models out there. I know Vern Harnish has one. Scaling Up is one of the better, best ones. Traction's one of the really good ones. And there's MAPS, I think. But it's essentially a framework to align and organize your business. And the secret sauce really was, organizing a management team, right? Defining who you were. As I said, we practiced rent law and we weren't that bad 7 years in when we really started organizing the firm. But what we did do is we hadn't really defined who we were. And we hired in somebody to come in and help us. And he had basically said, well, you know, you're going to be, I hate to say this, you're going to be Walmart or you're going to be Nordstrom's. You need to figure out who your core clientele are. Who are you going to cater to? Are you going to cater to, you know, are you going to be Walmart and you're going to mass produce, mass volume, untailored product, but it's going to be the same thing consistently over and over again? Mm-hmm. Or are you going to be Nordstrom's and you're going to cater to, you know, you're going to have a luxury brand that is clearly defined and it's adaptable and amendable and tailored to your client's needs. So you really have to pick a platform. And so once we figured out, you know, we're a Nordstrom's model. We mm-hmm. are, you know, our line of, it's a very closed niche. It's a small field. It's not very large. And our clients have very specific needs. And so we've really tailored our services to provide for them in every aspect. We really decided, you know, we're attorneys, but there's a business aspect because we're also business owners. So there's a business aspect and there's a legal aspect, right? And so they need legal advice, but they needed business advice. Mm-hmm. And so we really became a you know, a be all end all place for our clients to, you know, to use as a resource, whether it was for their legal work, for their document work, for, you know, investors, for brokers, for other things that they needed, anything from, you know, getting their website designed to offering their services, you know, SEO thing, because these really were these businesses, they need help in every respect.
Yeah.
So once, I mean, the secret sauce then was, and I try not to be so verbose, but once we put our management team in place and we put the right people in the right seats, right? They were doing what they did best. And once we empowered them to do what they did best, it just skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it took off. When you empower the people under you, remember somebody said, is Alan Peterson, actually. I think you know Alan Peterson.
Yeah.
Yeah. He goes, if you're the smartest person in the room, fire everybody. Because that's not who you want to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Christina, did you guys hire as the EOS implementer or did you hire a consultant?
It wasn't EOS. It was Lead with Purpose.
Mm.
And we had a one-page plan. We still use it today. And I think it's a phenomenal program. It's called Lead with Purpose. Mark Kohler designed it. It's a software. But it's very similar to like EOS. I think any of those programs, if you can get them and you can implement them and you stick to it consistently, I think it's
good. Yeah.
I think they're kind of all the same, but they're all in the same wheelhouse.
Yeah. Okay. And I remember when you were talking at the spa, we were doing this TEDx style. You were really big in culture. Can you tell me more about that?
So culture is a huge, right? Culture is people, because that's where you know, that's where I found if I empowered people to grow. And really that is one of my values, right? Education is a huge value for me. If you give them what they need and the resources that they need and you encourage them to do it, you see them flourish and they bloom. And they culture, we couldn't have somebody in there that didn't agree with that mentality. And we've had it before. And if you don't have the right mentality across the board, then culture could basically build you up or kill you. So mm-hmm. if you have a strong culture, I love what is it, the Camel Culture by Arnie, I'm not remembering his name. And I apologize. He talks about how to really get your culture aligned. And I was able to see him at MIT. I saw him present and I took a lot of his notes and I implemented them inside the firm. One of the biggest ones that became the most helpful was called he calls it the dark arts. And I basically called it the employee survey was, mm-hmm. Okay, how happy are you? And if you're not happy, you know, are you happy, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10? And if you didn't give us a 10, why? And that was eye-opening.
How did you handle that when you have like very low score? How did you handle that personally? You read all that survey and results, and it's very hard to make the face, right?
Right. It's really just getting down to knowing what people really want. Mm-hmm. And if you can provide it, the rate of return it'll skyrocket, you know. So how did I handle it? Our management team, when we first started reading these results, everybody would get angry and get hot and be like, oh, that's so-and-so, even though it was anonymous, okay? So we had no idea if it was so-and-so. That's so-and-so, and they're just bitter because of this. But once we got past that, and we always took a couple of days to just relax and let it go, we're like, okay, now that we can get the emotions out of the way, we can see, okay, what the real problem is, and if we can address it. And if we can address it, well, let's address it and let's fix it. Mm-hmm. And some stuff we were just, you know, wow, we were just really naive. We had no idea this was even an issue, right? Yeah. And it was very easily fixable.
Yeah.
Other stuff it was a long process to fix. Compensation structures are always difficult. They're always difficult. I think they're difficult anywhere, right? Because people are always going to feel that they deserve more. And
That's a lot to take in. And I know I get sometimes to get in trouble for opening my mouth. Remember that? I won't mention it, but.
No, I love it because you're actually very good about your culture. The ladies are.
No, I mean, I love, no, I, what I'm saying is, no, I love my team. Actually, yesterday we were handling food to our staff, and one of my staff said like, oh my God, I feel like we're really not disturbing getting this. Like, no, this is for you guys. You guys took care of the company while we were open. It's our time to take care of you. We'll make sure none of you guys are hungry. But
you know, that when I saw you doing that, I saw you post a couple weeks ago that you were providing rice and, you know, beans and flour so that your employees could eat during this time. And some of them are even living in your hotel. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
With their family.
Yes.
And I just want to say that is just a true leader right there. It's a very kind person and it's just representative of such strong leadership. I'm very, very proud of you. You must be very proud of yourself.
Oh, no. It's just the right thing to do. It's
right. It's but not proud that you are doing the right thing during this time.
Yeah.
When I know things aren't easy for you.
Yeah, no, yeah, I know. And they all know, like, we're all struggling. All businesses are shut down, but I could do that. I would rather not have food in my table than them. All of them are hungry, you know, like, you know, it's just the right thing to do.
Well, and I think that's a very important thing you just said, because that was always my mentality, is that my employees eat first. Mm-hmm. They always have. They get paid before I get paid, period. So, and I've always believed that. I still do today, because they're working for you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
a failure of the business is my responsibility. It's not theirs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Christina, I know you've done that to your nanny too. I've heard you sharing that story, and you know, it's not hard to make a decision. It's just the right thing to do. And we know when we do that, we get threefold of motivation, because we really genuinely care about them.
But you're such a special person, right? And you're right now, you've got two, you know, you've got a spa at two locations, and you have a hotel at two locations. A hotel and spa, two things that are shut down. Shut down right now. You're not seeing any income. But I love it. I love the fact that this is during all of this, this is you started this podcast and people are downloading it. And the whole point is to spread hope and telling women's stories. And I mean, your story is phenomenal. You know, you didn't just pull the sheet up over your head and cry. You said, okay, I got to get out there. I got to feed my employees. I'm going to start a podcast. A podcast. What really, like, why a podcast?
Well, at first, you know, I was bored myself, right? I was, to be honest, I didn't think of it. I was just like, I was just going to do a podcast so I could entertain myself, so I won't get, like, really focused into what's, I mean, I'm not trying to stick my head in the sand of not really, you know, paying attention to what's happening, but I have to be productive in this time because I have so much time. And this really gets me into, like, oh my God, I could do a lot of things. And majority of us, if you've noticed, women, no one really talks about, everyone is so scared to share our story. Even me, like, how many times I have to post something, but I have to delete it because I don't want anyone to read or know my story, right? Like, we all do. Like, we would rather hide in the room. Like, no, we don't want to talk about it, right? So I was interviewing this two couple in the Philippines. They have 11 million views. And I asked them, like, how did you guys start? Did you guys plan it? So, like, no, I didn't plan it. So, like, my advice to you, if you want to do it, just do it. Don't even think about it. Like, you learn as you go. I mean, I was terrible at the first. It was dark, but I don't really care much anymore. So I'll just do it. And I think it's if we can help each other and know what other person is doing, what makes them successful, and even inspiring a one person, that's only my goal. And not knowing, I get all these messages that they learn so much or they're inspired. So why not?
That's why it's so important to just share your contribution.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what is your why?
Well, I really wanted to push to really help a lot of women entrepreneurs. I think if I know what I know now, I'm just lucky that I have you guys. I have the women of EO and other tribe, the YAC tribe, that really help me if I have a question or if I struggle and someone could give me advice. That would be great. That little help. Really, I mean, I could save a lot of money of making bad decisions or running a company you have no clue. Like, it just, you know, I wish if I know what I know now, I could have been better. And if I could save someone a mistake, that's great enough for me. I think that's the reason why I created the podcast.
Just to help people. We're sisters there. I mean, we resonate together. If I could just, I feel the same way. I get so much from helping others. Like, I derive so much pleasure if I can help somebody just be happier. I had a lady come over, a friend brought her over, and she was just so sad. She's like, I've been a sales manager for, 15 years, and they just laid me off. And my husband of 25 years just left me. And I was just like, oh my God, my heart went out to this woman. And how do I help her? Like, there was no words that I could say. And I looked at her nails and she was, oh, don't look at my nails. She's like, they're just so ugly. And the quarantine is, I can't get them done. And I was like, I have gel, I'll do your nails. And I did her nails and she was just glowing by the time she left. It was all the payment I needed. I felt so good.
Who
I
could just this lady?
Make this sad lady happy.
Oh, wow.
She was just so happy when she left. And I'm like, I feel so good right now that I made her, that I brightened her day just by doing her nails.
Yeah. You're so generous. Like, every time I come to your house, you just like, here's the food. You want to bring it? Like, you're just
very generous. I need to stop this quarantine has killed my wardrobe. It's like, what style of yoga pants are
we? Yeah. Well, yeah, I know. That's
funny. Like, I find that too. Little round.
We can just sculpt
it. Put the what is it, the contour on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I told you, sit in the sauna in the spa.
I know, I'll come over. I miss our spa days and our yoni scenes.
I know, right?
No. Talk about a concept. You brought that out. That is, what made you think it would work here?
Well, okay.
I did it.
You should define what it is, because a lot of people probably
okay, so yoni steam is. Yes, I know. Oh my God. I have yoni steam is vagina steam. Okay. And so we put different herbs, and the idea is you're embracing womanhood. You're supposed to sit there and meditate. And, you know, it's actually a very relaxing treatment. Don't you agree?
Yes.
Yeah. So sometimes it gets really a little bit weird, but I remember my mother has been doing it for a very long time for some other things. Like, it's really good after birth, and it's getting so popular. Well, me and Kalika actually went to Hawaii. We tried it, and I was like, oh my God, I used to do this after birth, right?
Oh.
And so that was the first time, I mean, in the US, but I've done it in the Philippines. But we used to just grab any different leaves or just hot water and steam with different, you know, like whatever medicinal plants that we can use. So I guess it's been done for 100. It's been done for 100 years in China for the royalties, for anyone. I mean, it was a very relaxing treatment. It just sounds
well. It's so fun when we get together as a group of ladies and we like.
Well, we just giggle and we have.
We were having our champagne and picking goddess cards, and Rosalia was there doing the meditation, and it really released the feminine energy. Like, it really brought that up for me.
Yeah. It's actually it's, you know, it's up to you if you believe in it or not, but it definitely makes me feel really good and connected with, I mean, I love just hanging out there and we all giggle and laugh and like what the heck we're doing, right? But that was a fun treatment, and I would love to do that in the resort. I definitely wanted to bring the customized chair and everything. I think it's really such, it adds, I mean, it's a great experience. I mean, I swear by it personally, and so is a lot of people.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of your resort, I never got to boil in your copper pot, the big copper cauldron.
So we call it the kawa bath. So
you should bring one of those to the spa.
We need to visit very soon.
Yeah,
this will get lifted. So Christina, can you name a person who had a tremendous impact to you as a leader?
A person. You know, over the last few years, there's been just so many. But I guess one of the very first attorneys that I worked for, she called me into her office. And I was a law clerk, and then I ended up becoming a lawyer during that time. And she was critiquing a memo that I had written, and she said, you know, you're so bright, you have so many ideas, and you, for some reason, you're just afraid of going for it. And nobody had ever told me I was afraid of anything ever in my life. And so she said, you just need to go for it. You just need to do it. And once you do it, then you'll be okay. You just do it again and again and again. And I think having, you know, a woman, especially a woman attorney, tell you, you know, just to take that first leap and just, you know, just go for it. Like, I was strategizing a case, and she's like, this isn't what you want to do with it, but this is what you should do with it. There, you know, if this is the road you want to go, even though it contradicts, you know, my strategy, I don't agree with it. This is how you want to go, then you should go. You need to believe in yourself. You need to just do it, because if you, you know, you can't second guess yourself. And so I guess that was the one person that really taught me, you know, to just, you know, it starts with you. It starts with me. Mm-hmm. I have to believe in myself first. And go from there.
Yeah.
Because nobody else is going to believe in me if I don't believe in me first. So I would say, as a leader, she was really it. Oh. I mean, somebody that had the biggest impact on me.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, tell me about a mistake that you made.
Oh, which one? A mistake that I made. Let's see. One of the biggest mistakes that I've made that I can divulge, not get in trouble for. I'm trying to think of something that I mean, the most recent thing is I screwed up a report. I was always used to doing it a certain way, and I would always look to the bottom line to take the numbers. And I screwed up because I failed to see that that there was a total at the end of the report. Mm-hmm. And luckily, the mistake was caught before it did any real damage, but that was a recent mistake. And I'm not going to make it again. I'll tell you that. So I always double check my work, but then, that particular time I didn't see that there wasn't a total at the bottom. And so that could have been a really big issue. So, are you thinking of another mistake? Maybe.
Oh, that's very good.
Screaming at my children, I lose it.
Okay, so what would be your advice to any aspiring entrepreneur?
Oh. Aspiring entrepreneurs. You got to get that, for me, it's taking that negative little voice in your head, uh-huh, and just ripping that shit out and throwing it away, you know, because those negative voices in your head, they don't serve you. That's the one thing, you know, there is, you know, that little, you're not going to do it. You're not going to succeed. You can't do it. That voice, just throwing it out. The other thing is to really stay. I mean, for me, what's super, super important is I meditate and I walk, and if I don't, I really go a little crazy. So for me, doing something that grounds me every day, for me, it's meditation and it's walking, it's self-care, just taking care of yourself. Cause I do notice that especially a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs, you're going to work. For me, I worked so hard that I just didn't take care of myself because I was so focused on the goal. So I think for a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs in general, is just really take the time out to care for yourself, because if you don't care for yourself, you can't care for anybody else.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. Yeah. So how are you pivoting? What are you doing with this current pandemic? Are you pivoting your business? What are you doing?
So right now we're in a fortunate position. You know, it's legal. So the attorney, so we naturally assume that securities and transactional work will, securities work will probably definitely go down, but transactional work will pivot as far as, instead of writing new loans and making new loans, clients will probably be looking at more forbearance agreements and loan modifications. Foreclosure work will probably go up. Litigation will definitely go up. Litigation and bankruptcy during, you know, a business downturn, people just tend to sue. So while litigation was somewhat down, it's that generally you'll see a big peak and a spike in that. And as people can't afford their mortgages, they will be filing bankruptcy. So lenders will need to be protected to secure their lien positions. And so there will be a lot of work.
A lot of work. Yeah, that's true.
But what the marketing and media division did, that is run by some bright people. And I wish I could take even an ounce of credit for it, but I can't. They're just an amazing group of people that run our media department. And they actually came up with the concept of a complete virtual conference. So while we had three conferences last year, we have our big one in Vegas, you know, with a bunch of attendees. We have another one in Newport Beach, and then we have one in LA. Like, while we have our in-person conferences, because of the pandemic, they actually created a virtual conference. And that's coming up May 20th, where all of our, you know, our clients or anybody, you know, interested in private money is able to attend, buy a ticket. And it's brilliant, brilliant idea. So that was one huge way that the company is pivoting.
Yeah. Well, a lot of smart entrepreneurs are doing that. I just paid $2,000 for this classes for, I think 4 weeks or 8 weeks, but like, there's a lot of things that you can do. We can be creative at this time doing it the right way, not like taking advantage of people. But yeah, you still could do virtual events, which a lot of people are doing.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I mean, like, look at the event space, right? I heard that that almost all events and concerts were canceled until 2021. But these, you know, really talented artists and DJs are out there spinning, and they're doing virtual conferences. Virtual events. You know, they're hosting you know, Friday night, Saturday night parties, and they're doing sets. And
I would love to.
It was really fun watching.
Talking about it last Sunday. Oh, we're not gonna mention what we're discussing. But something virtual
with our bubbly.
Yes, and so I know we were laughing about doing an investment in Joshua Tree. Isn't that so funny what people are posting and sharing about their properties, like making it sound like it was a big resort, but it's like a dirt.
What are you talking about? My property in Joshua Tree is going to be phenomenal. It's like, what do we call it? A dirt bag?
Yeah, I know. I just like every time I get, okay, for anyone who's listening, I have this property in Joshua Tree and I rented out raw land. And so people can camp.
Raw
land.
No, like, water, no water, power, no street, no road.
Nothing. Yeah.
It's dirt.
Yeah, so every time I get a booking.
With a view.
Yeah, so I get really excited. So I have to message Christina, look, I'm making $50 a night tour, like, dirt bag, it sells.
Right? I think it's great. It's great. Just throw up a fire pit.
Yes. Well, I actually created 3 stone, make it a fire pit.
So
at least you have something. So there's a lot of ways you can do to earn money. I mean, no matter what's going to happen, we're always going to figure it out because our brain is it's constantly working.
We have to.
We have to because we have a lot of bills to pay.
It's our nature.
Yeah, it just never stop. Like it can't, I mean, your brain is just constantly working. So Christina, how do you want to be remembered?
How do I want to be remembered? I guess I want people to say that she was a very loving person and that I did something that helped them be happier, you know,
that's
something just to be happier. Even if you looked at the world just slightly differently so that, or looked at a situation slightly differently so that you, you know, could experience joy, some respect.
Oh my God. I could talk to you forever.
I know. I was thinking, where was this food? It's supposed to be 30 minutes.
Yes. So Christina, where can they find you? What's your handle?
So it's Christina L. Gerasi. That is my Instagram. But my website is Gerasi LLP. So Christina Gerasi, Gerasi Law Firm, G-E-R-A-C-I. But if you go to Gerasi LLP, you can see all the phenomenal services that our media division is hosting. We, like I said, we have a virtual conference coming up on the 20th. We have webinars. We're hosting webinars probably almost weekly at this point. And that's me.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing all your sharing your story, for being open, and we learned a lot from you, like your advice. I mean, you're so amazing. You do amazing things, even if you think you're not. But I think you're an amazing person, and you have
you
a lot.
You are an amazing person.
And so thank you so much, and have a good day.
Thank you so much, Kate. I love
Bye,
you.
Bye, Christina. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And visit katehancock.com so you don't miss out on the next episode.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.